How are you?
Great. How are you?
Doing good.
That's good.
I'm itching to talk about, before the music has even stopped, I feel like I've never been more itching to just, talk to you about the thing we watched.
All right. Well, let's get into it then.
Should we just jump right into it?
Sure.
I feel like there is more to unpack in this one. Maybe it is. That's a good question. I guess we'll see, won't we?
Well, let's do some table setting here.
Okay, let's do it.
The year is 2003.
That's right. I'm in the dorms, my first year in college.
I am 11 years old.
Jesus.
Okay. It's 2003. We're 4 years after the original Matrix?
That's correct. 99 was the first one.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Columbia disaster. Okay. That's what happened
in
2003.
Yeah,
Iraq war.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Was that the first one?
That was the last one.
Return to the last one. Big year for Hugo Weaving. Was he?
Oh yeah.
Was he only in? I can't remember what his deal was in Lord of the Rings. He's in one of them at least.
The first Pirates of the Caribbean film came out.
I saw that.
I saw that in the theater with my mom as well. I remember being completely unmoved by it.
Yeah, and then they made 9,000 sequels, and they all made $900 million. And just what's the whole
Who's
fucking
watching
thing
it?
Here?
I've never even met someone that's a diehard Pirates of the Caribbean.
They're out there. I don't know if they're just Disney people or what the deal is, but Johnny Depp, his whole thing, I've never quite got the Johnny Depp thing.
Yeah, it's
I don't
just like,
see it.
Oh, I'm cool and mumbly, and people like my penis.
He just seems kind of slimy and shitty.
I remember I saw this movie with him in it. I think it was called The Libertine. And I don't remember much about the movie except that his character was just so fucking gross in it.
Yeah.
Gross in his behavior and in appearance. By the end of the movie, he was just falling apart.
Was he supposed to be a heel? Was he an antagonist of the movie?
I think he was kind of an antagonist. There was a lot of sex stuff in that movie. I was way too young to be watching that movie.
I'm trying to think Johnny Depp-wise, let's try to say, if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. That's what we always say. That's the motto of this podcast.
Yes.
It's not true. What is the most you've enjoyed Johnny Depp?
His commercials for Dior's Sauvage perfume or cologne. If you replace one letter, it's sausage.
That's true. And then they did the stylized font on the New York City posters, and sometimes I'd see it far away and think it said sausage.
Yeah, it's just him in a desert with a billion scarves, rings, and bracelets, and a tiger, and he's playing guitar.
That sounds like a Tuesday for Johnny Depp, I'm sure.
Yeah, that guy's probably got an interesting life. I hear he spends hundreds of thousands of dollars on wine every month or something.
Yeah, didn't some video leak not too long ago of him chugging a whole thing of wine for breakfast and screaming at Amber Heard or something?
Yeah, I know the stuff around Amber Heard was kind of weird. I feel like that might be one of... granted, I'm not too up to date on what the situation is there, but from what I understand, she might have been fabricating some stuff or whatever. I don't know.
Neither of us are deep in the celebrity gossip thing, so we don't know what the fuck's going on, but I do also remember just seeing mentions of maybe they're both terrible, or she bit off his finger, but he was abusive and drunk,
yeah,
and maybe they're just both... I don't know.
Yeah, terrible people beget terrible people.
Yeah.
Could be one of those.
Or maybe we don't know what the fuck we're talking
that's
about.
That's more than likely.
That is
that we
certainly
don't
the case that
I'm
we don't know.
Making wild judgments on things that we never even met the man.
People
we don't
will
know
never
anything
meet
about him.
People we don't even. We saw headlines and didn't even read an article.
Yeah, I know he's Captain Jack Sparrow.
That's true.
I know he was in Blow. I didn't see that movie.
I liked that. I enjoyed that as a teenager.
You know, come to think of it, I'm struggling to think of any Johnny Depp movie that I really
particularly
love.
People love Edward Scissorhands. I'm not big on that. I haven't seen it since it was in theaters. But he's done a bunch of Tim Burton stuff, and Tim Burton's not really my thing.
He's not my thing either. I just don't like that vibe.
What is it? Has he ever done cool action movies? I guess he was in Donnie Brasco. That's a mob thing. I never saw that. Yeah, I'm just struggling to think. I've seen him in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Blow is the front runner right now, because I remember seeing that and enjoying it.
I'm sure if I saw his filmography, there'd be a movie or two in there that I'd be like, oh, I kind of like that. But it's wild that for someone who has the name recognition that he does, that we're not able to immediately be like, oh, he was in this and this and this.
And we watch a lot of movies.
Yeah, we watch a lot of movies.
We got the damn internet here. And, this will be our preamble. Just trying to figure out a Johnny Depp thing we like.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to start reading ones that I've heard of. And then we can say if we have seen them or like them.
Okay.
Sweeney Todd.
No.
Pirates, a million sequels. Just saw the first one. It was fine. Minamata?
No.
Haven't heard of that. Fantastic Beasts. No interest. No idea. I think it's a Harry Potter thing. Dior Sausage, Legend of the Something. He played Man. Sherlock Gnomes?
No.
I think it was a CG movie about Sherlock Holmes as a gnome. Marilyn Manson, Kill For Me. Okay, that's got to be a music video. Murder on the Orient Express. I can't read all of these because there's just so many. Mm-hmm. Yoga Hosers? What the fuck? Mordecai? No. Are we exposing that Johnny Depp has never been in anything anybody likes? Lone Ranger.
Where are you right now in the year?
2013. Okay, Lone
maybe
Ranger.
Go back a little further. Maybe his heyday was...
Oh, 21 Jump Street, right. He did that cameo because he was in the original show, whatever. Jack and Jill? I forgot he was in that. Jesus Christ. The Tourist, Alice in Wonderland. That sounds like some Tim Burton shit. Actually, Alice in Wonderland, pretty appropriate for what we're going to talk about here. SpongeBob, he was in the movie.
Oh my God, what does
Corpse
he have? Like,
Bride?
Does he have the greatest like PR agency ever Maybe. Working for him? Because yeah, what the fuck?
He played Victor Van Dort in Corpse Bride.
Why does Johnny Depp get all this love and like Hugo Weaving's like? Well, maybe
yeah,
maybe because Johnny Depp like people find him to be very attractive.
Maybe Chocolat. I remember that came out when I worked in the theater.
Oh, I remember Chocolat.
Do you like that?
No, I didn't see it, but I remember it being a thing.
Astronaut's Wife, The Ninth Gate. Fear and Loathing. People like that.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You know what? It's so overdone and stuff now, but like he did a good job of, you know, kind of like inhabiting Hunter S. Thompson in that, I'll say.
Well, that's one notable, really good movie in a really long filmography. A guy that's arguably like the quintessential A-list celebrity, right?
You think?
Johnny Depp?
Oh, I think when people think about A-list, they think about like, well, are we talking about like the 90s? Are we talking about now?
I'm talking
like,
now,
I
baby.
I feel like Tom Cruise is probably like super A-list.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so is Johnny Depp. I mean, it's Johnny Depp. It's
I mean,
just,
you hear
like,
his name a lot.
Like,
I think maybe I just don't think of it because it's just like I've never given a shit about him or I've actively disliked his stuff, you know?
If I was at Stop and Shop and Johnny Depp and all his like jangly bracelets and rings was walking out, there's no way he wouldn't have a horde of people behind him being like, oh my God, it's
No,
Johnny
he's
Depp.
A massive star. I'm not denying that. Maybe the best thing I've seen that's Johnny Depp adjacent is that Nathan For You where they get the impersonator.
Well, yeah, listen, I'm not disputing the mediocre quality of his output. I'm just saying that he is definitely a celebrity for
he
sure.
He is a big A-list celebrity yeah. One that it seems that neither of us can really find anything we give a shit about.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, moving on to something that has absolutely nothing to do with Johnny Depp.
We got...
Oh, one more little anecdote about the year 2003.
Yes, please.
And this particular anecdote is what immediately timestamped it for me and brought me right back to that year. 50 Cent's In Da Club.
Oh, that was omnipresent.
It was ubiquitous. I remember it would play in our gym class.
That music video where he's on the treadmill and Dr. Dre is like the doctor and yeah, he's got the heart monitor. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I that's like immediately brings me back to like, I was probably in sixth grade. It just brings me right back there.
That was also me being in college. That was something you would hear in the dorms quite a bit.
Sure.
And that Get Rich or Die Tryin' album, not bad. Listen, and the first G-Unit one, not bad.
Listen, that guy makes some catchy songs.
He did.
It's no coincidence. It's the common denominator in those songs is 50 Cent himself.
He's into making sex. He's not into making love, as he said.
A great video game designer as well. Highly underrated.
Blood on the Sand is incredible. Bulletproof, not so much. The PSP Bulletproof, not so much. But Blood on the Sand, which is now backwards compatible on the Xbox. Do they say the Xbox family of platforms now? I don't know. It's just all Xbox.
Yeah,
it's Xbox. On Xbox now.
It's on Xbox.
Yeah.
If you put blood in a bunch of sand, would it get like goopy or would it just stay at the surface? Would the sand absorb it or would it?
I think it would stain it and it would probably get a little clumpy over time.
Yeah.
And blood congeals. That's
yeah,
the thing,
congeal.
Right?
Yeah,
I congeals. Bet it would get clumpy. I bet most things that are liquidy that you put in water make it clumpy. Even
you mean
water.
In sand?
In sand, yes. What did I say?
Water.
Yeah, I was thinking of water going in sand and that makes it, heavy and clumpy.
Just something to think about.
Yeah, it is. Something else to think about. God, that's a lazy. I could tell it was time to start talking about the movie, but you want to try?
Well, listen. No, I don't want to try.
Okay. Well, during 50 Cent's debut album, there were a lot of gunshot sound effects. And, you know, by the end of that album, I'm sure he had to reload.
All right.
It's technically a segue. Look, we had to get there.
Tenuous, but.
Yeah, yeah. The Matrix Reloaded, folks, 2003. I was so, I don't know if pleased is the word, but it was entertaining for me to, when the credits popped up, I'm sorry, the to be concluded popped up at the end of this movie. Seeing you, you probably had the exact same reaction I had all those years ago in that theater, because this was your first time seeing it.
Yeah, my first time seeing it.
I have not seen it since the theater opening weekend.
And keep in mind, this completely pure first viewing. I didn't know what happens in it. I knew nothing.
No trailer.
I didn't even know that this and the third one were filmed concurrently. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I told you about the 6 months apart release, and you were surprised by that. Yeah. That, I still think that's a pretty cool thing, but... yeah, it. I have not seen it since, and as I probably talked about last week, my thing about 2 and 3 is that I've always fucking hated them and never knew what the hell was going on in them.
Well, that is your thing.
That's my main thing. Everything I just said is verbatim on my back and a tattoo.
You hate everything and you don't know what's going on.
Oh, just hating things. Yeah, yeah. No, so my hope was that watching this again now, in the year 2021, that maybe I wasn't, you know, maybe it's a Death Stranding thing where I wasn't ready for it the first time around. And now with age and wisdom and patience and all that stuff that, oh, maybe it was just ahead of its time and I wasn't understanding it because I was a dumb 18-year-old.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a lot in this movie that I follow. I'm not satisfied by it. And then there's other parts where I'm just like downright like, what? That makes no sense. Based on what they've established so far in this universe, what I'm seeing makes no sense. Like, it is breaking its own rules.
And that's the thing, is the first one, how is the exposition and the setup of the world some of the most fascinating stuff? It's the concept is so cool that, like, yeah, the action scenes are the super memorable highlight reel stuff of the first movie, but the concept is the thing that made that such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's so fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean, you're, like, Neo is kind of the audience surrogate for the first half of that movie where... Mm-hmm. We're learning about the Matrix and what life is really like, and the reality of the situation is dawning on him and the audience, right? And naturally, in the second one, you know, they don't have to dilly-dally with all that exposition or explanation for what the Matrix is. Now it's so much more action-focused, and we see, well, we learn more about, you know, what is the One, what is the Oracle, who the architect is. And how, you know, this quote unquote prophecy is really this cycle that keeps happening over and over again. So it's less of a prophecy and more just like a computer cycling through certain processes.
It's the way this process works.
Yeah. But yeah, way more action focused. Some really interesting action scenes, like really impressive. Obviously, the visual effects, they up the ante from the first one. But there are also a lot of scenes where it was much more explicitly CGI.
Most egregiously, I think it's the fight with all the Smiths.
Yes.
Because a lot of that looks fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, in fact, the choreography is, it's still way more good than it is bad. I'd say it's one of the highlights of the movie for sure. But there are definitely parts where it's like, ooh, this is some PS3 cutscene faces going on here, you know?
And it's, excuse me, it's very noticeable, especially in that Smith scene because, you know, Keanu, as he's spinning around, it's very clearly a computer rendered model. And he's spinning around amidst a sea of people who are real people, real Hugo Weavings all around him. So that contrast, the fact that, like, there's nothing but real people surrounding him, it just makes it so much more obvious.
Yeah, and I read, too, that, like, for the first one, it was all just, like, a bunch of cameras in a circle that they would just kind of, like, you know, go between when they were doing the rotating thing. Here, they had to make, like, a virtual camera. So there's a lot more that's kind of fudged in the making of it. Again, incredibly impressive. Like, it doesn't even look bad by today's standards, but if you're looking for stuff, you definitely see the face problems and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, going back to like early 2000s, late 1990s CGI stuff, whenever there's a figural model moving, whenever it's something beyond just like special effects, it is very very clearly age, you know what I mean? It ages poorly. But that being said, you know, all that aside, there's really impressive action sequences here. That one, of course, the one that's recurring throughout the movie, which is like Trinity falling down a building while she's shooting up at a agent.
Which is the first thing you see in the movie. So they're like immediately doing bullet time stuff, mm-hmm. you know, like they're leaning hard into that here.
Right.
Although one thing I did notice is that there was a lot less gun stuff in general in this one. And I have to wonder if this was a conscious decision because of the hubbub around Columbine and everything. Because remember the first one, I mean, like when they go into the, that famous lobby thing where they go in, guns, lots of guns. I mean, it's just nonstop. He's got a billion guns. And when you think about all the action sequences in this, there's a lot of swords. There's a lot of hand-to-hand stuff. There are guns, that first thing with Trinity and stuff. But like, think about the Smith fight. Think about the highway chase. There's guns shooting, but it's not as explicitly like, hey, we're going into a place with a trench coat and shooting everyone.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I could see that. Especially just that, you know, trench coat with guns aesthetic is like, you know, irrevocably tied to a Columbine and what happened there. But, you know, also, I mean, Neo can just make bullets not work. So it's like I could see them just not wanting to even bother. Although it does warrant some thought, like the fact that he can stop bullets, but he can't stop like a human moving or a, you know,
oh,
what
that's
mean?
A good point.
I feel like even the strongest person wouldn't move with the velocity that a bullet does. Right.
Yeah, the speed. Maybe it's like a weight limit. I don't know how the Matrix powers work.
Yeah, yeah.
You can bend certain rules. You can break certain rules. Like, that's one of the things that was less satisfying about this one to me is, like, a lot of the biggest moments in the first one was him realizing he's the one, him becoming Neo, him stopping the bullets for the first time, him learning Kung Fu or jump, you know, like, him, like, believing in himself, basically. Right. Oh, he's beginning to believe. Like, that's, like, those are iconic parts of the first one. Here, from the first second we see Neo, he's just fucking Goku. Mm-hmm. He is flying around, like, clouds are swirling around behind him. He's, like, they say he's always doing a Superman thing.
Yeah.
And we know that from the end of the first one. It's like, and that was the big question before this one came out, is like, what's it going to be like? He can fly now. Is he just going to be flying around? And it's like that Saints Row 4 where it's like, well, the one before was kind of grounded and it's like a GTA clone, but now you're just fucking jumping over skyscrapers and flying around.
Right.
It's, you raise that bar so much that it's enticing, but it also takes away a lot of what made that first one special.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, the success of the first one, it was hugely successful, but I feel like what a lot of people talk about from that movie is not the really interesting idea of the Matrix, but rather all the special effects stuff, right? People think of the bullet time stuff.
One of the aspects. I think there are like a lot of things about that first
sure,
one,
but you know? Like considering the popularity of it, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, we don't think it's confusing because we are already familiar with the concepts, but like a lot of people thought it was confusing.
Yeah.
But the bullet time stuff isn't confusing. That's just fucking awesome, right?
Yeah, and if you say Matrix to someone, the first thing they're going to picture is like,
that's
going
what I'm
backwards,
saying. Yeah,
you
that's
know?
What I'm saying. So
yeah.
I could see them really like, you know, okay, we have to really go hard with that stuff. But it seems like all the more heady conceptual aspects of it, which in my opinion should have constituted the bulk of the movie, were kind of relegated to just a few scenes here and there, you know? And, there was such an abundance of action that like every scene was bookmarked with an action sequence almost, you know?
Yeah, and it's well-made action, but then like when they do the heady philosophical stuff, which I want to save some of it for the end, the talk with the architect, it is way too dense and way too just like, wait, we're just going to sit here and talk about this for a long time? Like, I want to get to that at the end because that is the defining thing of this movie that I remember hating.
Well, it's just, you know, it's a weird, it's not a storytelling tactic that I like.
No.
You know, we talked about it a lot with the third season of True Detective, where it just built up this mystery. And then in the last episode or the second to last episode, I forgot which one, there was just this info dump where all the mysteries are solved.
Here's where she disappeared and just, here's who took her.
Yeah,
and here,
just in the span of one conversation, so much is revealed. And it kind of makes the rest of what you watched seem kind of worthless, like a waste of time. You know what I mean? You spend so much time thinking about what is the nature of this, what we're seeing, trying to understand the clues and the mystery, when the reality is you're all just going to have everything answered within a few seconds. And like, yeah, I mean, we don't have to get super into it now, but that the fact that all of that, like the actual narrative progression, you know, for the most part was kind of condensed until the last like quarter of the movie was really strange.
Yeah, it's from the Metal Gear Solid 2 Codex School of Exposition, where it's just like, here's a head talking to you and explaining the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, one thing that we mentioned to each other last night is that as we were watching this, I was entertained watching it, but if you would have stopped me and asked me what's going on at any scene, you know, I probably would have had trouble pinpointing exactly what the motivations are. Like, a lot of it was just like, oh, well, they're just going there because they were told to go there without any real, you know, they didn't even figure or deduce that themselves. Like, the Oracle just told him to see this guy, you know what I mean, to find the Keymaker, and now he's on the way to find the Keymaker. You know what I mean? It's not like multi-layered. It keeps you from getting invested in something when it's just something that's being told to the character to do.
Yeah. Before that, it's just like, you're on this ride for like, oh, let's see this cool action sequence, this cool set piece or whatever. But it was at the point I wrote down where the Keymaker stuff at the end, mm-hmm. where it's like, okay, you got to go to this random building and you got to destroy like a nuclear plant to shut down the power to get to the source. And at that point, that is where I was like, wait, I don't know what anyone is trying to do.
Right.
I know this has to do with the Oracle thing. I know that you had to see a guy that'll take you to a guy that'll take you to the source. How does this impact the Sentinels coming to attack Zion? Mm-hmm. Like, wait, what do we, because like they kept a bunch of like ships back to like fight the physical war in the real world. What does the prophecy say? Like, does Neo go to the source and blow it up and then the humans win the war? Like, at no point did I understand what the fuck we were doing by the end, you know?
Yeah, it was very strangely told, and their motivations were always like kind of ambiguous. I always just kind of was hanging my hat on knowing that, like, all right, they're trying to get to the mainframe. They're trying to get to the quote unquote source. I know that's where this is going to end up. So I'll just kind of suspend my disbelief and go along for the ride. But there are a lot of parts along the way that were just really head scratching. Like, listen, Monica Bellucci, she's number one. Okay. She's just number one. It just doesn't get any better visually. She just makes me feel horrible about myself, but also at the same time, so pleased because she's pleasing to look at.
Yes.
But, you know, so that's to say that while I appreciate her presence, her whole little arc here was just very head-scratching.
Her whole thing and the Merovingian?
The French guy, yeah.
Yes. So let's back up and figure out why she had to go there. Mm-hmm. Because Neo sees the Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
Oracle says, which, by the way, was the Oracle eating red pills? Is that what was happening?
That's what it looked like. Yeah, that's what it looked like. It looked like she was eating red pills like they were candy. But the Oracle kind of reveals that she's a program herself.
Right. Yeah, which in her role was to like investigate other programs or something like that.
Yeah.
It's all very confusing. But she is not a human. There is no Oracle in a tube somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like describing a game engine, basically, saying like, oh, there's programs that dictate what those birds do, or like a day-night cycle, things like that. And then what was the thing she said about how like vampires, werewolves, aliens, and ghosts were like, they were programs that were like freaking out? And like that explains like where these like urban legends or these myths come from, is because like, oh, the programs that were just like glitchy or something.
Like, yeah. Like the people are seeing these glitches in the Matrix, but thinking it's a ghost or whatever.
But then there are actual ghosts in this movie, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
That's also very confusing. So she says, you got to find the Keymaker, and the Keymaker is being held by the Merovingian.
Right.
So again, I don't understand at this point why we're doing this, but he meets the Merovingian
at this like fancy restaurant.
Which, are they programs, the Merovingian and Persephone?
I think he is. I don't know about her, but I think he is, because he, you know, obviously he's aware of the Matrix, and he wrote that cake that woman ate, and then
the orgasm cake.
Orgasm cake.
Yes, and that was supposed to explain causality.
Eat a cake and have an orgasm. Yeah, it seems to make sense to me.
That whole talk was about cause and effect and causality, and everything is this, and there's no free will, and it's all these philosophical things that he explains through making this lady come with a cake.
Well, yeah, like, and that seems to contradict the message of the movie, was that, like, you know, it's human choice that is the reason why, you know, they need all these protocols in place to begin with.
To to stop like a Neo situation from happening, like somebody who actually exhibits free will? Is that the thing they're trying to say?
Well, Neo himself is a program, right? Like Neo, it, like he's part of the, like, because humans being imperfect because they have the ability to make choices according to the architect, right? They have the ability to make choices, therefore they're imperfect, and every now and then there needs to be the one, and right now we're on the sixth iteration of the one to kind of, you know, all, the 1% of people who reject the program that are living in Zion, at a certain point, they need to be stopped, because if their numbers grow enough, then the machines will be threatened, right?
And Neo's, if too many people make people wake up, then it'll threaten the...
Yeah, and Neo is the program who kind of is, like, charged with, like, leading that... that rebellion, I guess.
But is it always
inevitably failing?
Is it always Neo, though? Is it the same? Because he has a physical body in the real world.
That's what's confusing to me as well. And, you know, well, I'm just going to mention it here, even though it happens right at the end. Like, he has a physical body in the real world, but yeah, in the real world at the end, he does crazy Matrix shit. So yes, is the real world that we're being told is the real world, like what we're seeing in Zion, is that another Matrix?
Yeah, and I don't know if we're going to get the answers to that. That's some real, again, Metal Gear Solid 2 shit where, oh, Fortune can magically stop bullets. Oh, but then it turns out she's got a little device, but then they take it away and then she still does. It's like, wait, what? You can actually, do you have magic powers? What's going on here? You know? Yeah, that whole thing, because if there are six different ones, because this is the sixth one, we're watching the sixth one, but I don't know if they're different people or if they're saying, because like the architect at the end is showing all those TVs and it's like, oh, here's all the millions of different ways you could respond to it, you know? So like, is that all the different ways Keanu Reeves' Neo has?
My impression was that it's always Thomas Anderson, because, you know, they had the videos of him on the wall and they were clearly like different videos of him. But it, obviously it's the same person, right? It's all Keanu Reeves, it's all Thomas Anderson. So that was my interpretation, that just like every few years, or I don't know how they measure time.
But so it's the same guy in the tube every time? Cause like he's got a real body, you know?
Yeah. That's the real body stuff that's what makes me think, like, is this reality? Is Zion like that whole, everything outside of the pod, is that just another matrix, like another layer to the matrix?
And I don't think you're going to get your answers in these three original episodes, but I'm just going to tease that, like, in the trailers for the new one, like, there is some really intriguing stuff they've shown. Like, can I just tell you one thing that they've shown in the trailer? In the trailer, because, like, so this is great, because I remember going frame by frame when this trailer came out. I remember downloading it and, like, IGN, like, a tiny little file and going frame by frame on Real Player or whatever. And people have done it with this one, too. And there's a lot of scenes where, like, in the movie world, there are screens and stuff that are showing clips from the original movies. Mm-hmm. Indicating that, like, what, like, that those movies exist in The Matrix 4? Or are these memories? Or is that, like... why are they seeing scenes from the Matrix movies in this new Matrix?
You know what? This is a little aside, and this is, I noticed this when he was in the room with the architect, and it showed like the wall of videos, and it showed like some Trinity stuff and everything. I love that whenever there's like in a movie, when it's like someone going down memory lane, conveniently the memories are always exactly shot for shot, like literally just taken from the movie itself.
Yeah.
Like, I wish they would just go the extra mile and like film it with a different camera, so that when they do show these memories, they'd be like, oh yeah, this was their perspective and not the camera's perspective.
That bugs me too. And we were watching something recently where people were like looking inside a window at like a court thing, like somebody was getting convicted in court, but it was the same shot we had seen earlier in the movie where it's like a dramatic zoom in with like a nice camera. It's like, that's how a courtroom footage looks like. Right. I can't remember what movie we were watching, but okay, so back to unpacking the Merovingian. I don't know if this is intentional, but Monica Bellucci and Keanu Reeves in Dracula together.
Oh.
And also, I can't imagine this was intentional, but at a certain point, they like warp him basically after this fight, and he's in this like big castle, you know, like he flies away from this like castle in the mountains that looks very Dracula-y, and him and Monica Bellucci were both there, like, I'm probably overthinking this, but...
Well, listen, there's Orange Cassidy references in Shin Megami Tensei 5, so
that is true. Possible. There's always fans of different things putting Easter eggs and stuff. Yeah. So the Merovingian stuff, I don't know what the fuck he is. I don't know what she is. there's that weird thing where she seems, if she's a program, she's a program that is fallen out of love with her shitty cake orgasm husband, and so she wants to make out with Keanu Reeves in front of Trinity.
Yeah, that's
and,
weird.
Yeah, that like, whole thing's weird.
Yeah, it just didn't, it was like, complete. It just seemed like we have Monica Bellucci, let's just do the sexiest thing we can do with her and have her just make out with Keanu Reeves because it's her.
I thought it was going to be like, she's putting on lipstick first. Yeah. And I thought like, oh, she's putting on some crazy Matrix dust that's going to let him see some program or whatever. And it's like, no, they just make out and then they go have a fight with other guys.
Yeah. And Trinity was none too pleased.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She pulled a gun on her.
Yeah. That's a little exaggeration, Trinity, but relax.
Yeah. Well, he's the one, you know, he's her one. Then they,
if Monica Bellucci came up to you and was like, I want to kiss you like you're in love with me, like, I wouldn't even know what to do. I'd be like, well, I'm not going to not let him, my husband, kiss me. It's Monica Bellucci. I'm not going to deprive him of that. Weird for me.
I assure you I am not going to make out with Monica Bellucci.
I certainly wouldn't pull a gun on her, that's for sure.
Right. They wind up having that lobby fight around this point, and they say something about how like these guards are from an older version of the Matrix.
Right.
Where it was like less refined. Like, I didn't quite understand what was going on there.
Yeah, they seem really glitchy. Like you talked about the ghost stuff. Like the twins, for example, they kept like ghosting out of one place and ending up another place, kind of like how the agents will be able to warp around like that. So it just seemed like they were really glitchy, and that's why, you know, glitchy, good for business, but bad for functioning,
sure.
A functioning Matrix, I guess.
And they suck in that fight too, that like lobby fight, which that lobby just seems like it's like, okay, here's a cool set piece with like some statues and a bunch of like Dynasty Warriors weapons on the walls, which by the way, speaking of Dynasty Warriors, we both had the thought during the Agent Smith fight, like, oh, this is just a Dynasty Warriors fight. Yeah. So I want to back up a little bit because one of my biggest issues with this entire movie, and I'm kind of dreading because I don't remember if this is a bigger problem or less problem in the next one, is the vibe is so different from the very beginning in that, like, I love the first Matrix because it's the world we know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, but the rules can be changed. And that's what's so fucking cool about it is like, it's offices, it's people, it's like, but then all this cool shit happens. This one is like Zion. It's a lot of this underground stuff. There's like the Nebuchadnezzar and mechs and the Zion control rooms and stuff. And I think that takes it away from made the first one so unique.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel more just like what you see in sci-fi all the time.
I agree. Yeah. Zion didn't resemble like any kind of city that we know at all. And it didn't make sense too. It was like all these people, this giant rave, and all these women are wearing like mesh shirts, so their like boobies are out, and like they're all grinding with each other. But it's like, are there no children in Zion? It seems like everyone in Zion is here right now. Like, kids can't be exposed to this filth.
Well, they grow people in fields, but I wonder, did they do anything to sterilize people when they put them in the pods? Because like, you're right, there is zero.
Well, there are some people who are entirely born outside of the pods, like a Tank and Dozer from the first
one. Right. Okay, so there is birth.
Yeah, happening. There's like natural. There is natural people. Yeah, but
I love how in the first one we talked about how like there's no romantic chemistry whatsoever between Neo and Trinity, and then at the end it's finally like, ah, I love you, and then we go straight from that to just like sweaty fucking. Like,
yeah, that was that's like another thing for me. It's like him and Trinity just have like no sexual chemistry whatsoever, right? I mean, it's, I don't know what it is. It just, I don't buy into that relationship.
There's not a lot of good human chemistry, even in the first, we talked about that in the first one, like that's probably its biggest downside is like, there's just not, these don't seem like real people. Their interactions don't seem.
I think it would have been a better movie if they didn't have like the forced relationship between them. If she was just like a badass woman, like just, I feel like, you know, in older movies like this and earlier, whenever there was a hot lady, like there'd always have to be, she'd have to be the subject of some kind of romantic interest.
Sure.
You know what I mean? She couldn't just be independent.
Didn't Edge of Tomorrow do this? Didn't Emily Blunt at the end finally be like, yeah, yay, let's make out. Yeah. Like, wasn't that kind of like, oh, come on. She was such a cool fucking character.
It's like,
you know?
It doesn't, you don't need that. You know what I mean? Two people can just be people in a terrible situation. They don't have to fuck just because one has a vagina and the other has a dick.
I think that's just such a movie thing that's always happened, but it's kind of a bummer in The Matrix because like The Matrix is so just bold and different in so many ways. And then to kind of just fall on like, and then they fall in love. It's just like, okay, come on. We thought you were different than this.
Speaking of half-baked concepts, I feel like Niobe's character was really one-dimensional as well.
And Link. These are the two main new characters they introduced. The
Link
guy from
was
Lost.
The operator of the Nebuchadnezzar.
He's like the pilot, basically. He's the guy from Lost and Oz and Harold Perrineau, I think is his name. Yeah, like good actors. I like Jada Pinkett Smith and Harold Perrineau, but like these characters don't do anything. They just stand around and like...
Yeah, and they also kind of force this thing on Niobe where it's like she was used to be Morpheus's partner and now she's with Captain Locke. And so Locke and Morpheus have this kind of rivalry with each other, which is like, just come on. Why does it have to be like she's in some kind of love triangle? Like, can't she just be a badass lady?
Yeah, and the whole thing's boring. Commander Locke is boring. He is just kind of that trope of just like, I'm just here to win the war. I don't care about your hocus pocus stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's been a lot of like Star Wars stuff, like people who don't believe the Force and they just want to do the military. Mm-hmm. Like, we've just seen this shit before. And also it's weird to see like Morpheus go from this like mystical, all-knowing, like religious figure in the first one. Like, think about everything Morpheus does in the first one.
Yeah.
And he's just so fucking cool the whole time and mysterious and all-knowing. And now he's like an army dude who has to like answer to superiors and he's like riding in a car and like it's just like
really
it takes away some of the mystery of Morpheus.
Absolutely.
You know, there's cool shit where it's like, oh, Morpheus is on a highway with a sword. I remember seeing that in the trailer and being like, fuck yeah, I want that. But then it's just like he's just an army dude. But then he like gives a sermon at a church thing before the orgy rave.
Well, yeah, one thing I wasn't expecting watching the first one and having not seen this yet, I didn't have any idea of what Zion would be like.
Right.
And I didn't know how many people were in Zion. My like assumption was that there weren't a lot of people at all and that the crew on the Nebuchadnezzar like constituted a good portion of them and that there wasn't a lot of people. But no, there seems to be like thousands. It seems to be like a well-populated city. I mean, it's 1% of humanity that's there, right?
It's like the core of the earth. It's like, it doesn't look like a human city, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then also it has that thing where it's like, oh, they're relying on machines to help sustain the habitat there.
There's the talk with the priest guy where it's like, well, these we can turn off, but then those, so like they keep us alive, but they can also kill us. And it's like, I see what you're trying to say here, but it's just like none of it hits the way all this stuff hits in the first one.
Yeah. I feel like so much of this could have been excised and like just had one sequel that was really good rather than, you know. It seems like a lot of unnecessary stuff happened in this movie.
Yeah, like this movie makes for a badass trailer because there's a bunch of cool shots, people jumping around statues and swords on highways and Agent Smith fights and stuff like that, which we have to touch on that. So Agent Smith, first of all, I don't really know how he's back because he got blown up in the first one.
He was like removed from the program. So now he's a rogue program when we see him now.
Which that's a cool idea. I like that idea that he's just like, he was this like machine within the machine that just had to follow these rules. And now he's like got, we talked about in the last one, like he's got these kind of like human motivations and stuff.
Right.
Like the idea of him being this like program that's loose and doesn't have his earpiece and stuff like that's intriguing to me. But how did he got blown up? But again, we're in the Matrix. So what does that even mean? Did he get deleted? They emptied the recycle bin. Like, I don't know. What does death mean in the
Matrix?
If
his, like, quote-unquote physical form within the Matrix was destroyed, does that necessarily mean, like, we know that if a human is killed in the Matrix, then they're killed in real life, but maybe the same rules don't apply for a program. Maybe he was just torn out of the Matrix, and now, because now he's back and more powerful than ever, it seems, like, he's able to duplicate himself and turn, like, wholesale turn people into clones of his, you know?
Which is, like... I guess I can kind of understand that in the lore of like, okay, he's copying himself within the program or whatever. So like the Agent Smith fight with all of them, I can see that and I'm cool. I can suspend my disbelief there. But where I don't understand is when you cross that line into the real world, just like Neo having Matrix powers in the real world, how is Agent Smith able to infect a program and or infect a person that's in the Matrix and then all of a sudden he's like corrupted his mind in the real world?
Yeah. Like, yeah, that is what happened. But yeah, it raises a lot of questions. Again, when Neo does the stops those robots, the Sentinels in their tracks, like thing that raises questions as well about, you know, how real is the real world in this movie? Is it just another, you know, layer to the program to just appease anyone who has like a rebellious art or whatever?
Yeah, that's confusing. And then there's stuff that's just pointless. Like, you talk about a lot of action scenes that are just for the sake of action scenes. It's never more egregious than when he shows up to see the Oracle and he meets that guy Seraph who's like meditating and the guy's like, first we fight.
Yeah.
And then they have like this long fight scene and he's just like, no, I just had to see if you were cool. You know, it's like, look, we have enough reasons to have cool kung fu fights in this 2-hour and 20-minute movie. You don't need to shoehorn anything in. This character who does nothing else in the entire movie.
I agree.
Who fights him and is like, okay, she's over there.
Yeah,
you know?
That's literally his whole role. Yeah.
I would say that's the most, like, pointless scene in the series so far. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and again, I expect more from this being the Matrix.
Yeah. You know? So we expect Neo at some point to have to choose between, saving Trinity or saving the world, I guess. And because we keep seeing him have those dreams about her dying.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like kind of not satisfying how we arrive at that scenario where he makes the choice and he's able to save her, which like he's seen her die many times and he's able to save her just by sticking his hand in her belly and resurrecting her.
Reaches into her and squeezes her heart to bring her back.
Yeah, it's really weird. It just seems like a Deus Ex Machina thing where it's like, well, we'll give him the power to do that. Why not?
Yeah. And it's dumb too, because it's like he's in such a hurry to go save her because he knows she's falling. But like, if he wouldn't have stopped to tell the architect, like, well, if I were you, I would hope that we never show up again. As she's like falling, you need to go fucking pick her. Like, she would have not got shot if you would have hurried at that point.
Also, you know, stupid move on her part. She should have just listened to him and not gone in there. Just trusted that he knows what he's doing because he's fucking the one.
Yeah. So, actually, before I get to the, I want to talk more about the architect thing. The car chase, the highway thing, is probably one of the cooler parts of this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's, once I saw it in the trailer, I was like, oh shit, I've never seen the Wachowskis do a car chase. That sounds awesome. Which, I should probably see Speed Racer, because I heard that's kind of a wild one. But this is really cool. Like, I mean, we've got the ghost twins, which, did they even try to explain the ghost twins?
No.
They're just ghosts. They're just weird, pale, dreadlock ghost guys.
Like, they didn't call them ghosts. They think they're just glitchy programs, right?
Yeah, but, like, if you were walking into a room and never seen the movie, it's just like, oh, they're ghosts that they're fighting.
That's what you would think, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff here that I liked. I love the effect they use when the agents take over people in cars. Mm-hmm. It is a really kind of freaky, like, their faces are, like, warping and stuff. I think that was awesome.
I wonder what happens to those people. Are they dead once that happens to them?
Yeah.
Do they die?
That's a good question. Like, what happens to, like, when Mario hops out of a frog that he was inhabiting in Mario Odyssey, you know?
Did the frog just feel really violated?
Yeah, yeah, and just on to the next one, I guess.
Is that right?
Yeah. There's the parts where they're, like, the agents are, like, hopping from car to car. I thought was super awesome on the highway. It's very Terminator 2 when the agent takes over the semi-truck driver and is chasing Trinity on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
That was extremely that. Also, when Neo flies in, it's a really cool shot when the trucks collide and then Neo flies in to save the key maker and Morpheus. But that's the first time we see, like, the city that they're in, which we talked about how in the first one, it's just meant to kind of look like an Every City USA type thing. This is like this fucking Judge Dredd super city thing. Like, they didn't touch on this at all in the first one. Like, why is it suddenly, like, the biggest city that's ever existed on the planet?
Yeah. Do they even give it a name?
No, they don't. And I much preferred it when it was just like, it's a city in the States. I don't know. It's like, it's a real world city. We don't have to, like, give it a name. We don't have to make it fake or make it this big sci-fi, you know, cityscape thing. Like, it just looked super weird to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought this was supposed to be, like, eternally 1999. And, you know, there's certainly no cities like that. There weren't in 1999. And frankly, I don't think there are now.
No. And that's the thing. It's like the whole first movie, all the stuff in the Matrix, like, that's part of why it's so cool, is because it seems relatable. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, wait, why does it look like this now? Yeah. Oh, there are a lot of frustrating things.
A lot of frustrating things. It's one of those movies that, like, it's first of all, it's fine. I didn't hate it. But it's bad in this weird way where you as a viewer are kind of lost watching it and just kind of have to accept what's going on, rather than having, you know, having, like, understanding of what's going on and its implications, you know?
Yeah.
You're just kind of, like, along for the ride. And it's like you're along for the ride, but you're, like, floating alongside the ride and you're not actually on it.
Yeah. It's like you're along for the ride, but right before you do that first big drop on the roller coaster, they pause and the architect of the roller coaster comes up and explains to you how they built it. And it's like, what, can I just get on the ride? Like, I don't need to, like, this is taking too long, you know?
Yeah, it's bad in weird ways. It obviously, the action scenes are really good and mesmerizing at times, and conceptually it's interesting. But the way the story is told is very ham-fisted and lopsided and unevenly distributed, and the pacing is just atrocious. It's really poorly paced.
The whole Merovingian thing takes forever and everything just grinds to a halt. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Or it's just like it's constant action.
Yeah.
Or just this Merovingian thing is just like what's going on now? Like, this, it's just like whiplash, you know?
Yeah. And so what is your takeaway from, like, obviously they felt very strongly about the architect scene, because it is kind of like the big thing at the end, and it's a long scene, and it explains, or it tries to explain a lot, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. But what, like, he says something about, like, the difference this time versus all the other times is love. So, like, I guess all the other times before he didn't meet Trinity and fall in love, but he fell in love this time, and so now it's different, and now, like, what is the... That whole long talk, they're talking for a long, they're doing nothing but talking. What did you get out of that?
Yeah, all I got was that Neo, like, this prophecy wasn't so much prophecy as just like another program. And that, you know, he's kind of destined to always want to try to stop rebel against the machines, but failure is inevitable. And that, you know, the best thing to do is, like, if he were to proceed one way, that would result in humanity's extinction. If he proceeds another way, that would result in, you know, at least starting anew with Zion, you know, with a select few breeding people, I guess.
Oh, yeah. So does he also go against the prophecy? Because the prophecy was that he was going to go to the source and save the world or whatever. But he didn't. He chose to save Trinity. So was he actively going against the prophecy?
Yeah, I don't think he was. This is where it gets very confusing to me.
Here's what I want to do, because normally, like, after we watch a movie for this, you know, we'll, like, read up, like, the plot summary and the whole, like, wiki article and any articles about it. I specifically wanted to try to parse this out with you, and it's very clear that neither of us understood what the fuck happened with that. So I found the paragraph on the plot summary in Wikipedia that is just about the architect conversation.
All right,
I'm going to read this and see if we understand it. Neo meets a program called the Architect, the creator of the Matrix, who explains that as the One, Neo is himself an intentional part of the design of the Matrix, which is now in its sixth iteration. Neo is meant to stop the Matrix's fatal system crash that naturally recurs due to the concept of human choice within it. As with the five previous ones, Neo has a choice: either return to the source to reboot the Matrix and pick survivors to repopulate the soon-to-be-destroyed Zion, as his predecessors all did, or refuse, causing the Matrix to crash and killing everyone connected to it, which combined with the pending destruction of Zion could mean humanity's extinction. Neo learns of Trinity's situation and chooses to save her instead of returning to the source, to which the Architect responds dismissively. So the five previous ones went to the source to reboot the Matrix. And that's why it all just kind of restarted. And because he fell in love this time and wanted to save her, that's why we're getting a different outcome.
Yeah, I guess so.
And that's why this time is different.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess that is what they're talking about with, like, love is the difference this time, because that was the thing that made the change. But that is, it's dumb.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's it reminds me of in Watchmen, where, like, I think it's Ozymandias or whatever, or Dr. Manhattan is, like, on Mars talking to What's-Her-Face.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how, like, essentially how, like, you know, he can go anywhere and see anything and be anything, but, like, the one thing that's, you know, the most unlikely thing is the fact that she's standing right there and she is who she is and the idea of love and all this stuff. And I just feel like that made sense in that context, because it made it seem like love is this, you know, amazing thing that's just so unlikely but absolutely transformative. But here it was just kind of like, maybe it's due in part to the fact that, again, they have Trinity and Neo have no chemistry whatsoever.
Yeah.
But it just was just kind of like tacked in, shoehorned in as just like, yeah, I mean, like, if human choice was a thing, he always had the choice. He could always fall in love. Like, what is different this time? Like, I don't know if it's just him that's recurring or if it's that whole crew that's recurring, if it's the same.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And if love is going to be the linchpin of, like, you know, both of these movies end with love, like, suddenly love is the super important thing. Mm-hmm. He resurrects. He comes back to life because of the power of love at the end of the first one. And love is the thing that makes things different this time. And you're like, but you need to put more effort into the love part of the story if that's going to have any resonance, you know? Because it's bad.
Yeah, it's very, and it all just comes at you so quickly because it's all just told to you through dialogue.
Yeah.
All at once. So it's a lot to contend with at the very end of the movie there. And then all of a sudden it just ends abruptly in a to-be-continued sign, which is just like,
yeah.
So just like, come on, really? Yeah.
And also, you can't just like make up for the fact that there's no tension here with just like, let's have a scene where they fuck. Yeah. And then it's like, what's that? They still seem like fucking cold ass. They seem like machines to each other in this movie, you know?
Just very, very unnatural. It's so obvious to me in like sex scenes in movies where the actors are like carefully posed. Because listen, we've all had sex before. It doesn't look anything like that. You know?
We're in this little like cubby hole in a cave or something. just like intertwined.
Yeah, like, entwined legs and all just flawless skin. And
it's closer to MacGruber.
Wow. See, if Trinity would have done that.
Then we got some sparks flying. Well, yeah, and you mentioned like the to be concluded thing is just kind of like, really? That's the thing? But not only is it the fact that it ends with to be concluded, it's that the fucking stinger, the cliffhanger, is dumb.
Yeah.
It's that like, oh, everyone died in the real world when they tried to do this counterattack, except for one, this guy that set off this EMP. And it's like, oh, it's that guy that Smith infected at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, great, more Smith.
And we've barely touched on this guy.
Yeah, we've already fought an army of Smiths, and now the main one, like how we're leaving this off on cliffhangers, another Smith. Like, it just does not. I wouldn't be super anxious to see the next movie if, like,
sure,
you know, if I knew there was a few months between this and the next one, I wouldn't be like hankering for it. I'd just be like, oh, like it just leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
Yeah. And while I love Smith as a character, I think he's one of the highlights of the first movie. It is this weird thing where it's like, well, we had this bad guy that we killed off in the first one, but everyone loved him. So what if there's a million of them? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, ah, come on. It's like, it reminds me of that last Star Wars where it's just like, there's a million Star Destroyers and they got a million billion Death Star powers. And it's just like, oh, come on, don't just ruin it by making it too many, you know?
Yeah, overdoing it. Oh, yeah, oversaturation for sure.
But to be fair, it did give us the moment where he throws a Smith through a bunch of other Smiths and it makes a literal bowling strike sound, which, you know, I think that, you know, it's all worth it.
Wachowski's subtle. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's there's good stuff in this movie. There's obviously a lot of talent that went into making it. There's a lot of stunning action in it. But man, it's a bad taste in the mouth.
It is a mediocre film.
I'm glad we're watching it because I really do think I have to think that this fourth one is going to kind of encompass everything. Because mm-hmm. how else do you do it? Because the first one doesn't end with a conclusion, really.
I'm not optimistic about this, but I'm hoping that the next one, which will be the third one that we watch, kind of clarifies my questions a little bit. But I also anticipate that I will not be made whole here.
I did see one Patrick Klepek tweet that it was time for cultural reevaluation of The Matrix Revolutions, and he called it a absolutely beautiful film.
All right.
So,
well, if Patrick Klepek says it's good.
Well, we will see. But I'm not holding my breath because, honestly, the reality of watching this now is exactly what I thought it was. It's exactly what it was in 2003. Mm-hmm. Time has not made it better or worse or anything. It's still just a bad sequel to an incredible movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not a garbage movie, but a bad Matrix sequel.
Yes. Especially because naturally you're going to compare it to the first one, and the first one is just so far superior.
Yep. So that is The Matrix Reloaded. And you know what's coming next week, folks. We will be watching The Matrix Revolutions. We will see how that goes. So thanks to everyone taking this ride with us, and thanks to everyone that is part of our Patreon.
Thank you.
We keep it very simple. It is a $5 tier once a month.
$5
once a month, that's it. And that gets you everything that we offer here.
20 quarters.
You get 20 quarters. Is that the math checkout? Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. It gets you early access to our episodes.
Wow.
It gets you ad-free episodes.
Wow.
It gets you access to our Discord.
Wow.
It's happening. And it also gets... You hate it when I call things happening.
No, I love it.
Do you? It makes me sound very old.
Why are you pointing? Just relax.
I'm turning into my father. Sorry. And yes, also, it gets for you, written for you by Bonk, your very own Bonku. Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we have, Bonk?
This week, we are honoring our friend Rob.
Rob, thank you.
Rob, if you're out there, if you're hearing this, I hope your day is great. This Bonku is for you. Rob began to shake when the beast, cloaked in black cloth, beckoned him forward.
Ooh, I like the mysterious ones. The beast, were you picturing like a big monster thing or like an evil, like a...
Just a weird figure cloaked in a black cloth. You can't even really make out what it is, but he's beckoning Rob forward and
I like
inviting
it.
Him. Maybe with some tempting promise of a
come hither finger
inciting Rob's curiosity, but he might be in for it if he gives in to his temptation there.
Rob, be wary, be careful, and I hope you'll be back to listen next week, as it will be to be concluded our Matrix trilogy rewatch before. Remember, we're going to do the Panty Awards after that, and then we're going to cover Matrix 4. Bonk, it has been a fun ride doing these with you, and I'm looking forward to wrapping it up with the Matrix Revolutions before we see the new one.
All right.
All right. See you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.